Welcome to the Brands Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. During our fireside chat with Sabrina, we gained insight into the Vera Bradley Influencer Program. With their initial goal being getting engaging content, they've truly turned their program into a content producing machine that feeds the entire marketing strategy. One of the best examples of how you can leverage your influencer program for your overall marketing strategy, Sabrina works closely with the entire marketing team to ensure that they have images that deliver on their email, their brand social accounts, and PR campaigns, along with images that can be used on the website, all created by influencers. With 60% of their social feed on Instagram being curated influencer-generated content, they are certainly hitting the nail on the head with their program and are definitely in the next stage of a how can we go even bigger? Armed with analytics and proof in the pudding that influencer marketing works, it'll be exciting to see how their program grows in the future. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for a little influencer marketing Q&A with Sabrina from Vera Bradley. Sabrina, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, an extension of the unanswered questions from the Brands Talking Influencer live webinar that we just came out of. I'm happy to have you on here. We've got so many questions. I told you the most questions that we've ever received. So it is power hour. All right, let's get started with how do you combat skepticism on whitelisting? I think a precursor question is, do you do whitelisting?
Yeah, so we do not currently do whitelisting. I have found a lot of people just include that in their rate. So I always make sure to let them know that we don't do that because then it seems to give me a cheaper rate. But that's something we're getting into. So I'm sure I'm going to watch a lot of podcasts on whitelisting.
We've got a fireside chat that covers whitelisting. Got lots of good content for you on that. Do you provide promo codes and affiliate links to your content creators? And if so, what's the ROI associated with this?
We do not house our promo codes on Grin, but we do have another third party that houses our promo cards. It's a whole ambassador program that's run separately from what I do, but I do let my creators sign up for it just to make sure that they're able to offer their followers the same thing that all of our ambassadors are able to offer. And I'm so sorry, I'm not sure how they determine ROI on that.
That's okay. I think it's worth noting that we in Grin also do promo codes and affiliate links so that you can track back the ROI on that as well too. And you can identify what the return on investment is in the report builder, in the reporting dashboard, and also at the campaign level as well too. We like to give metrics at all areas at Grin. What tools or methods do you use or recommend for finding the best influencers to start working with for your brand and brand goals?
First and foremost, I really enjoy the search tool in Grin. Primarily, we use the lookalike feature. That's our number one go-to. But if there's ever a time that I'm maybe not having much luck on a certain day with that, I'll go over to Instagram and I will click the little triangle that kind of shows you the like accounts on Instagram and just kind of open a ton of tabs at the same time and just start clicking through people. So it's a little time consuming, but it still provides good results.
Excellent. This is a great question. Because you like to retain relationships with influencers and continue to work with them for months, do you ever worry that you aren't expanding your audience?
Yeah, so that's something that we constantly try to grow that pool of influencers that I'm keeping in a long-term partnership. So just talking specifically with our program at the beginning of this year, we only had, I think, like 4 people that were super long-term with us. We've since grown it to 15 super long-term and 40 kind of long-term. So we're just constantly trying to grow it and we kind of cycle out. So if somebody does join a long-term partnership and they don't pan out for whatever reason, maybe their content just doesn't meet our standards or maybe it just tanks in performance on their page. We do cycle in influencers constantly from our gifting program.
Oh, I like that. That's a great way to make sure that you're always keeping it fresh, right? And approaching it from so many different angles. Can you speak more about your initial outreach? Maybe provide more detail to what you say, how you introduce yourself, how many times do you contact them prior to moving forward with a relationship?
Yeah, sure thing. So if it's just a gifting campaign, I introduce myself, I introduce what I do for the company, and then I also introduce our company, because although we've been around for a long time, I don't necessarily assume that everybody knows who we are or what we are. So that's one thing that I really try to give up front. And then I just kind of set our campaign outreach at every 3 days, just like two or three pushes after the initial email, to target them again with a, hey, just check in to see if you got my last email. And I don't continue to pursue people. If they don't want to talk to me, I assume, one, they're either too busy or they're just not interested. And I'm not really in the market to keep chasing them down. I'd prefer to find people that are almost instantly wanting to get back to me.
Well, your time is valuable. Do you, because I know that we have this within Grin, not only do we have email templates, but we have also email sequences as well too. Do you put people in an email sequence so like a set of three emails automatically go out and then you're just responding and not having to be like, oh, okay, who do I need to reply back to today?
Yes, yes. Email sequences are so helpful. That's something that we could just kind of set it and forget it. And then same thing, the scheduled emails are so helpful, especially when I'm in the middle of a campaign. It's so nice to set everything at the beginning of the campaign. Like, all right, I know that the content's due on X date. I need to set a reminder the day before. Like,
yeah,
all of those kind of things are super nice to just, again, set it and forget it.
I love it. How do you verbalize the value of influencer marketing to higher ups who are too obsessed with numbers and ROI and don't fully understand the value of influencer marketing?
Yeah, I'll circle back to one of my first presentations that I had to give to our leadership team. Instead of just coming to the presentation with a bunch of numbers and a bunch of just like data, I came with a slideshow of our creators, and I walked through who the creator was, what they do for a living, what their blog's all about, who engages with them. And I more kind of taught the leadership team that influencers are living, breathing people. And that really kind of changed their kind of view on things to see like, oh, this is an extension of our marketing team, but a whole different light. Yes, there are numbers and values attached, but the more important thing is that you've got an actual brand advocate that is doing things on your behalf.
Absolutely. And it always goes, when you have someone that is an advocate for you, it goes beyond a post. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you run into this as well too. Any product that you love, it's that word of mouth marketing, right? Like, you're talking about it, even if you're not posting about it. So I think that's really key, but it is really hard to articulate out to, you know, the VPs or the C-suite and like truly be able to identify the value. The other thing that you had mentioned that you do as well too is you do attach a metric to it, which I think is really interesting. I think that you had mentioned that 60% of what you guys post on social comes from influencers themselves. And that, as someone who also manages, you know, social media for us as well too, like, that's incredibly time-saving.
Yes. So we report that out on social media. And then we try to do the same approach, looking at how much we call it UGC, user generated content, how much UGC got into emails last month, how much UGC ended up on our website landing page. So just trying to, again, teach how much the information can spread across all of digital marketing.
Absolutely. Now, what is the price range or percentage you can offer a nano or micro influencer to get them interested in working? And this is obviously past the gifting stage that you talked about during our Brands Talking Influencers portion.
Yeah, sure thing. I think I try to be really real with their time. So when I first meet them, I don't really ask a lot of them. And for that reason, I make sure I don't really offer that much to kind of just get us on the same page. Once they start performing, I start to ask more of them. And even if their follower growth hasn't grown, like even if they've stayed at their 2,500 followers, I make sure that we increase their compensation if their deliverables increase. And if their like kind of asks of imagery, if I'm being more specific and direct with their images, I make sure to compensate them more. And that definitely seems, if you start at a very minimal approach, but you slowly increase both the rate and the deliverables, you still stay on the low side of a budget. But at the same time, the quality of the work that you start getting back is exponentially better, because they're seeing that you are appreciating their worth and paying them as such.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And it is great to have like it match the effort that you're asking as well too. Like, I'm asking you for more, so I'm going to give you a little bit more. I'm not trying to squeeze more out of you without like, you know, a compensation portion of it. And that speaks to the human to human, right? Like, these are people.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the new Instagram DM feature that prioritizes messages from brands and creators' inboxes? Will that change your view on DM versus email?
I haven't heard of it, but I think it's one of those where our inbox is managed by our customer service team. So
yeah,
for me, it's just, it's so like in like the behind scenes of my head. And I just appreciate the offering that I can email people from campaigns inside Grin, that I still don't see it as something that I will get into using.
That's fair enough. Now, how do you manage influencers under different social networks, or are they the same for all networks? Well, let's talk about what are your primary networks that you're really leveraging creators in?
Yeah. So for the past 2 years, our number one goal for the social media team at Vera Bradley was to grow our Instagram. So okay. Our primary feed when I started and what it's been heavily has just been on Instagram. But obviously with the rise of TikTok, with the rise of our internal leadership wanting us to go after kind of an older demographic, since our customer sits a little older, we've kind of shifted. I have a lot of older bloggers on Facebook, or I have a lot of younger on TikTok. So as our goals have grown, we've kind of spread our deliverables across platforms. Mm-hmm. But always, 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 Instagram post is normally the priority.
Do you do something differently with them if they are on a different network? I would imagine that maybe it's slightly different, but I don't know. That's also why I'm asking the question. So Instagram versus Facebook, is the expectation different? Because there is no like grid feed essentially on Facebook. Right. So
yeah, I'm a lot less, I don't want to say strict because I don't even think we're strict on Instagram with imagery, but we're a lot more loose on Facebook with imagery. And we kind of, since it's not our primary market, just like TikTok, it's not our primary platform, I kind of default and really ask deep questions on what really works for you on your Facebook or what really works for you on your TikTok. And that's the kind of content I want them to create and post on those platforms. Now, I mean, flip the switch. If we start to really get on TikTok, maybe our asks will change a little bit. But right now, I more kind of throw it back at the influencer and say, what do you think will perform really well?
Well, I also feel like that makes the most sense, right? Like they're the ones that know it's essentially their brand. I wouldn't post anything that doesn't make sense, right? If it's not my kids or my dogs or my husband, then you should be suspect of that. How many relationships do you maintain on a regular basis?
Yes. So every single month, our average is probably around 80 relationships per month that are active. Now, sometimes like in the summertime, we have tons of launches. So I've gone upwards. I think in July, I was at like 240. And that was absolutely nuts. Like trying to communicate and like keep track of 240 people at a time. But winter, we're slowing back down. So right now it's about 80 a month. In terms of like prospects or people that I've just had in contact, I'm pretty sure our number is like over 1500 that we've at least made some sort of contact, whether that's been an outreach for, hey, we want to gift you, or maybe they've accepted that gift, or maybe it's been a one-off or a partnership 6 months ago, but kind of our like pool.
Yeah.
It's over 1500.
That's insane. Insane. Do the influencers retouch their photos, or does the Vera Bradley team do it?
We do it just because with our product, we're very specific that anytime our product goes up, we want the colors to match, because being a pattern color focused company, it's important to us that what goes up really matches what the customer is going to be purchasing. So for that reason, we do ask for unretouched images. Like a lot of times we don't even want the lighting edited. Yeah. We just want it and we'll do it ourselves so that nothing in the pattern gets distorted.
That makes sense, because you guys do have such vibrant patterns as well too. So it speaks to your brand for sure.
Yeah.
Now, what is the best way to vet valid influencer sales? How do you exclude purchases from Retail Me Not, Honey, etc.?
Yeah. So that's our ambassador team is kind of on that. Our ambassador team is still very new. Mm-hmm. I think it's a third party, but a third party that makes sure to be watching for our ambassador codes to make sure they don't go up on those sites. It's one of the, I think it's like a terms and conditions that you can be terminated of an ambassador if your code goes up. Now, sometimes we've had instances where it's like the influencer themselves didn't even post up the code. So in that case, we just swap the code. But for the most part, I think it's third party.
Excellent. And I know that while you guys don't use like the promo code within Grin, we have those promo codes and you can actually set timelines for those, right? Which is really great for, you know, like BFCM, right? Like enjoy this particular code, but it's very limited time. So even if it were to go up onto one of those sites, you know, you're able to turn it off and switch it off pretty quickly on that end. How do you come up with the rates for people? If you don't do the same rates for everyone, what determines the higher rates?
Yeah. So I've kind of worked out my own little standard of, I do kind of like a by product. So even if your X level of influencer or X level of influencer. If you shoot with one product, it's kind of this range of standard. If you shoot with two products for me, it's this range. Like, it's kind of almost a tiered approach. And that really helps me with nano influencers. I can still pay a pretty cheap rate and they're shooting 4 to 5 products for me. Whereas if I get into my macro, I can hit their dollar amount that they want. Like if I'm with a 50,000 following range and they throw out like $1,000, well, I might not be able to hit that with one, but I can tell them I can hit your number with, and I just try to increase the lower deliverables. So that way everybody's still being paid very similarly, but we're just hitting that with so many influencers. They just want to make a certain amount.
Yeah. I love the way that you have a conversation with them about it. And I like to use the word conversation versus negotiation, because I think negotiating sounds like it's such an intimidating word, right? If you're a non-confrontational person, it can be incredibly intimidating. But if it's a conversation and you're taking the time to build a relationship, it's easier to have that dialogue with someone of like, hey, this is what I need and this is what you need. Help me help you get there. Any advice from either of you on service-based companies versus product-based companies? I can take the service-based because I've definitely run a program on service-based. It was an in-person like lash company. You had to actually go in there. And I think I'm also a silver linings person. I believe that there is opportunity everywhere. You just have to figure out how to make that opportunity. So I think that if you're a service base, think of leveraging influencers and creators from an experiential perspective, right? Like bring them into experiences that they can then share on social as well too. You can also leverage a promo code internally with them as well too. It's less of a swipe up, it's more of a delivery, but also with like QR codes nowadays too, there are great ways to be able to like track things back. And then in order to be able to like measure the success of like campaigns like that, if you don't have like an e-commerce site, it's really taking a look at like your uptick on your brand growth on your social feeds, right? Use hashtags. I think that that's a great way to leverage creators and influencers for service-based, but I think there's opportunity for anybody to really leverage influencers. How many you leverage, it really depends on your time and how much you want to really invest in it. What is the best way to reach out to influencers and what do you look for in an influencer that works with your brand?
Yeah, so best way to reach out to an influencer, I really like finding something that's unique about their platform. So making sure that I call out why I'm actually interested in them and that, yes, it's a cold pitch, but at the same time, I want to make sure they feel special and they feel like we scouted them for a purpose. So for us, we're a pattern color-based company, so it's pretty easy a lot of times to be like, I'm obsessed with how much color is on your feed. Like those type of comments are like, the way you did this was so happy. I loved it. So those type of key call outs really seem to kind of make us stand out maybe among maybe other brand pitches that a lot of people get. What was the second part of that question?
What is the best way to reach out to influencers and what do you look for in an influencer that works with your brand? What do you look for an influencer?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I look at timeliness. So if I send an outreach pitch on, say, a Monday and they don't get back to me for like until the following Monday, it's like, all right, you've had a whole week and a weekend, and that's how long it took for you to get back to me. So I'm looking at people that are really on top of their side hustle. So we know some people do this full time, but especially when you're working with the nano to micro, you're going to find a lot of people that are kind of doing it as their part-time gig. So step one is finding people that are timely. Step two is finding people that follow directions. So if the directions were, I mentioned this in the fireside chat. If it said, this is a sustainable material made from recycled water bottles, do not use plastic.
Yeah.
And they shot the image with plastic. It's like, all right, how many more like shoots are we going to work on where they don't pay attention to like the red line items? So we also look at people that are really good at following directions. And then lastly, people that are just genuinely interested in VR broadly, because again, we're pattern, we're color, and we're not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah.
But we're happy and we're fun. And we want to find people that are happy and fun and actually would wear a Vera Bradley bag. We get a lot of people that are like, ooh, yeah, I'll do a black backpack.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we sell black, but we're not black. Like we are so color. So it's hard to find people like that. But once we do, we know we found a good brand fit.
Well, it's the right person is the person that's going to share your brand story as it is, not like in a different way.
Yeah.
How do you handle the administrative part of shipping samples to content creators? Great question.
Yeah, so this is where I love, we have a PR coordinator that handles all of our samples. She is incredible, and she even has gotten herself integrated in Grin to be able to email out tracking. So she is such a lifesaver, but she's in there every single day checking on her fulfillment tab to make sure she can help send things out and do tracking. But is that kind of administrative?
Yeah, I think that it is an administrative. What e-commerce platform do you guys use? And do you leverage the e-commerce integration within Grin?
We use Shopify, but our Shopify is not the out-of-the-box model. So it's got some sort of add-in that makes it incompatible with Grin for that purpose.
Okay, excellent. Well, not excellent. I wish that it wasn't. So it would be so much easier to ship. Yeah, I know that within Grin, we've got multiple e-commerce integrations with Shopify, Shopify Plus, Magento, WooCommerce, Salesforce Commerce Cloud, and all that good stuff. And if you were integrated within those platforms, you would be able to fulfill all of those orders within Grin because it talks to your e-commerce site, which makes it really fantastic. And you can do it in mass production, which is such a time saver. This is an interesting question. What is Grin? A platform to post, organize influencer campaigns, question mark? I'd love to hear your answer to what is Grin. And then I'll obviously come up to help, you know, I'll tell people what it is.
I think how I explain Grin, like Grin to me is like a CRM. It's like that customer relationship management tool. I think that's what that stands for, but it's where I can manage all of my relationships and store all of my information and run my campaigns, keep track of past conversations, past interests, past product orders, past posts, analytics. It is a one-stop shop for influencer marketing.
I love that. I'm going to pull that soundbite. That's exactly what we are. We are creator management software, right? I always like to say, if anybody who's listening is familiar with like sales and Salesforce, what Salesforce is to sales, Grin is to creator management in the influencer marketing space and also other creators as well too. How do you determine how many influencers to incorporate into a campaign?
Good question. So now that I've gotten a good year under my belt with Grin and using all the analytics to report out on, I'm pretty good at forecasting how much certain influencers will cost. So first and foremost, I find the bloggers that I know I want on that campaign or I know I want on that 3-month partnership. And then I kind of look at the bottom amount and I'm like, all right, I have this much left. Who's done a really great job in a gifting campaign or in a one-off that I can pull up? So it's never really about like quantity of influencers. It's more over like the quality of the people that I already have and then the quality that I can add in and still fit in my budget while returning a really high ROI.
Nice. Now, do you personally manage the influencer budget and ensure that the gifted product value fits within that budget?
Yes. So we have, it's kind of tied all into PR. So it's like a PR and social budget. And then in terms of like the influencer side of things, I house all of that information in my brain.
All of that in there. So it's a lot. Do you give influencers options of products to select from when gifting or do you pre-select for them?
We do kind of both. They definitely have a good selection to choose from, probably 20 to 30. It's always within current season or a couple seasons old. So within the past 3 months-ish. So it's been pre-selected, but then they have freedom of choice of style. So maybe it's they want travel or they want backpack. But
excellent. Now, how do you advocate for influencer marketing on a team where the value add isn't immediately understood by leadership? This is obviously a very constant question when it comes down to it. And I think that you've already answered it, but is there anything that you would want to add to being able to show the value of influencer marketing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just having an open, honest conversation, especially talking about all the research that goes on behind the scenes that us influencer marketers are doing and how much time we're spending in the day-to-day learning about the growing market, because there's so much value that other people are giving. And then taking those little learnings that you see across. So even if you haven't seen that yet in your platform, you at least learn that other brands have achieved this and know that this is your goal and you're not there yet, but you just would like their support a little bit on getting towards that goal.
Excellent. I love it. What do you consider micro and nano content creators follower-wise?
Yeah, I'd say 25 and under is what I'd really say. We hit a couple that are in the 50 range, but that's kind of our sweet spot of like bottom of micro and down.
Okay, perfect. And how do you differentiate between ambassadors versus influencers?
Yeah, so we get this question a lot because it's confusing. And I know we're trying to be better about explaining it, but our influencers are the people that we have pre-scouted and enjoy how they style out our products, so much so that we want to repurpose their content for our digital marketing. And we want to make sure they continue to post about us. So these are paid relationships where we work together. Our ambassadors, they make commission, but everything they do, they buy their own products. They market themselves with their own ideas, their own creativity. They don't really have a lot of structure from us. They do it on their own and they just earn commission.
All right. Next question. Do you give your content creators deadlines for content submission, or do you let them submit at their own rate?
Yes. So we are pretty specific with our content deadlines. We usually map it out from at the point that the product ships. So once it ships, they know that they have a designated window of time to submit it back. So it's not necessarily a date. It's just normally forecasted out from the date the product goes out to them.
How long do you typically give them? Like a couple weeks, a month?
Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks is about the time frame. And it's something they sign on at the start. And if they, sometimes people let me know that's a little short for them and we extend it. Or some people say like, oh, I'll have it to you within a couple of days. So just keeping that communication line open.
Excellent. This is a follow-up question just because I'm curious. How much do you typically ask them for? Is it a post? Is it a story series? Is it IGTV, Reels? Like how much are you asking them in campaigns? And I'm sure that it depends on what the campaign is, but do you have like a good balance of what to ask your creators?
Yeah, sure thing. So our top priority is always content. So we typically say we want 3 to 5 images back per product that we send them. And we typically send them 1 to 3 products. So we give them a variety. We say, all right, in those 5 images, I need to make sure I see it on model. So I want to see you wearing it and I want to see it just in a still life setting. So little prescriptive there. And then always accompanying one of these deliverables is at least one in feed post or reel. With a lot of people, since they do get multiple products, we will institute 2 posts. Just kind of depends on their feed, their engagement, if we want to super beef up the posting.
Excellent. How do you navigate the negotiation process with each influencer?
I think we talked about this earlier. Instead of calling it negotiating, I think it's better to call it a conversation. Just leaving the door open and being really transparent in terms of what you can afford, what your budget is, and what you expect inside a certain range. So I find a lot of times influencers just have kind of a threshold dollar amount that they want you to meet them at. And then they will do a record number of deliverables inside that threshold as long as you meet them there. So you can get a lot out of a pretty cheap rate.
Yeah, excellent. And again, leaning into just that relationship that you build with them. It's a lot easier to do something for a friend than it is to just do something for someone that's just asking you for stuff.
100%, 100%.
So how do you feel about following up with potential content creators that were interested but didn't fill out their proposal? Do you run into that?
Yeah, we run into it sometimes. I'm running a campaign right now where I'm having that. I've got a couple people that were into the content delivery window. And so it's like we're getting close to where it's almost like I don't want the content anymore. So in that rate, I normally just push them to the next month. And I just kind of explain like, hey, our turnaround times are pretty quick. If you want to hop on board this, I need your proposal by X date. And then we'll ship by X date. And then their whole timeline starts for delivery. But we try to make that outreach to sending the product only last about a week. So we try to really move it and get it going.
So that's a good turnaround time for sure. How long did it take for you to get content creators that brought in good conversions?
I'd say with our particular program, we were in it almost a year and a half before we even had the capabilities to measure conversions. Mm-hmm. So a year and a half in, we started to have a program where we could track conversions and we started to see them trickle in at first. And it only took a couple months before we started seeing those numbers ramp up.
Excellent. How do you handle influencers not delivering the right way you want it? So maybe not delivering the right content on point. Like what does that conversation look like?
Yeah. So I think it actually starts in the outreach phase. I try to make sure that I give very clear expectations. So I say the goal of this campaign is X, Y, and Z. And that way at the end of the campaign, if they don't deliver on one of those 3 goals, it's pretty easy to circle back and say like, hey, just to let you know, this really didn't meet goal number 2. Can we try again next month with a different expectation? Or I'm going to put you on hold for a couple months so I can reevaluate and revisit this partnership in a couple months.
That's got to be a little awkward, or no?
It was at first, but I think the more you do it, the more easy it does get.
Yeah.
And I think if you do get really good, as long as you're evaluating everybody on the same criteria, it gets pretty easy to set clear benchmarks for, all right, this person hit the mark, this person hit the mark, this person didn't. So as long as you've got that clear expectation across the board, it's pretty easy to deliver the bad news.
Yeah. Well, which brings us to the next question, how to end the relationship. We actually get this question a lot. Like, we'll say, how do you break up with an influencer? Essentially, like, how do you tell them, hey, this is just not it. It's not me, it's you.
Yeah, I think transparency is key. So I used to start with like, hey, we're just going other ways right now. And now I try to be really explicit in why we are cutting ties. So whether it's they've grown in a way that doesn't match our brand anymore, or if their content does not meet our expectations, I just try to be really formal in that approach, that they know the exact reason. That way they can either work on it, or we don't burn a bridge. Like, they don't leave the conversation feeling like they have no idea what they did wrong.
I like that. So can you share some samples of how you pitch and introduce them to the product and the first interaction emails? What does that look like when you're sharing about Vera Bradley?
Yeah, we have a heavily detailed campaign brief that does a great job of combining both the product and the pattern. For us, pattern is huge and fabrication is huge. So we try to dive really deep into what exact fabrication they are getting. Sustainability is huge to us. So we mentioned the sustainability factor of the fabrication. So just try to give them all the really great talking points up front so they can hopefully see how they would be able to craft a caption, how they would be able to market it right away.
Do you manage all of your communication through Grin?
Yes, all of outreach and campaign management is done through Grin. If it's side conversation, I'll take that into my inbox. It still filters through Grin because of how that links together. But for the most part, everything is done through Grin.
Nice. And how do you keep track of which influencers provide the best content? Do you tag them in Grin? That tagging part was my follow-up question, because that's how I would naturally want to organize and be like, this person, you know, does deliver content or whatnot. But what's your process? And do you have a process within Grin on how to keep, you know, the quote unquote good content creators organized within an area?
Yeah. So since I'm over here and kind of a one person figuring it all out, I'm pretty good with just keeping them in the back of my brain. But I understand not everybody is like apt to remembering all of that. So we do have tags. We call people sales drivers or content creators on the backside of Grin. So if I know somebody's a really good content creator, they get a content creator tag. If I know they're a really good sales driver, they get a sales driver tag. That way it's easy when I'm refreshing a campaign or when I'm starting a new partnership, I can kind of pull up those people that I already have deemed winners.
Excellent. I've got one final question. I thought it was another breakup question. We have a lot of these breakup questions here. Do you ever worry that if you break up, quote unquote, with a collaborator influencer, that they will turn against you and post negatively about your brand?
I think I had that fear in the beginning, but I think that by being transparent, I almost am making myself more confident that people cannot turn negative if I'm very open and honest from the beginning to the end. I don't think people will be negative, but I have heard horror stories, or I've seen, like, I've had influencers send me poor pitches from the beginning from other brands, just highlighting like how kind of disorganized brands can be. So I say, be really organized from the beginning so that if you are breaking up with them in the end, the whole process was smooth. And then it was truly you weren't a good fit for the brand. It wasn't the brand was just really disorganized or really bad at communication. And that was the poor result in the end. So does that kind of help answer?
I think that does help answer. Okay. I think it's, when you bring up a lot of just kind of really great points in general. I mean, again, and I continue to say this, influencers, creators, they're people. We all want to be treated, you know, with integrity, and our time is valuable. Everybody's time is valuable. So if we're doing everything that we can from a brand perspective to make things as seamless as possible, like, it's reciprocity. The expectation is that the creator is also going to do that as well too. And sometimes, and I always like to tell brands too, it's okay if someone's not going to work out for you. This is your program. Just, you know, don't be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
And what a way to end the wrap-up of the Q&A. Don't be a jerk about it when you break up with someone, specifically a creator. I can't thank you enough for just all of the time that you gave us. Again, the most questions that we've ever received. So this was amazing. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I hope that you've gained lots of insights. It is always great to hear from marketers who are in the trenches of influencer marketing and learn from their story. Do you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. I wouldn't mind 5 stars. Go ahead and do it. And if you're interested in watching the Fireside Chat with Sabrina on how to activate influencers as content creators for your brand, or other brands that we've featured in the past, like Able, Organifi, Trifecta, Nutribolt, and more, visit the live events section at grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.